Hello everyone, Daniel Gregory here. Thanks again for tuning in to The Perceptive Photographer. Today I wanted to talk a little bit about how not all images are created equal. It occurred to me as I was watching some movies recently that I was reminded of the AFI, the American Film Institute's list of the top 100 movies of all time, which contains amazing movies. Citizen Kane, Casablanca, Schindler's List, Chinatown, some of my personal favorites, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, as I tend towards more of the adventure side. But it occurred to me that when I actually sit down to watch movies that I've purchased on DVD or digitally purchased now, but a lot of times I don't actually watch those greatest movies ever. Even though I love them, Chinatown I do think is one of the greatest movies ever. Citizen Kane is an epic movie, amazingly shot. But when I'm in the mood to just sit down and have a good time, I watch Galaxy Quest, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Big Lebowski. Maybe for a little thrill, I watch The Usual Suspects. But they're not movies that sit on the American Film Institute's list of greatest 100. But yet, they're on my list of probably the greatest 100. And as I was thinking about that, how we do that same thing with images, that we look at images and we might compare them differently based on what they are, which I think is a really, really important aspect of photography, is that we don't look at what we know to just be snapshots in the same vein we would fine art versus photojournalism versus commercial. I think there's a big reason why those get separated. And I think there's importance in really examining the photographs and analyzing them from their actual intention and purpose and meaning from which they were created. I had a portfolio review a number of years ago, and I remember just getting crucified during the portfolio review, and I couldn't understand why. I mean, I thought the work was actually decent. I thought it was interesting. As a fine art photographer, it lended itself a little bit more on the, you know, abstract artsy side. But as the review got done, I finally, you know, said to the reviewer, "What's the deal here? Why are you so harshly criticizing these images?" And he said, "Well, you've left no room for copy text." And I remember I kind of leaned back in my chair and I thought to myself, "Well, why would I leave room for copy text? There are fine art images going on a wall. It's not like I'm going to write on them." And he said, "Well, I work in advertising." He goes, "I look at photographs from whether or not I can write on them and put ad space." He's like, "So none of these photographs are actually helpful to me." And it really occurred to me at that point that, one, you really have to know who's actually looking at your work and what the bias is that they start with, because that's hugely informative and would have saved me 15 minutes of frustration. But second, that my work was actually not intended for the commercial space. So the fact that it didn't have room for copy was actually pretty important, because had it had a big space for copy, it wouldn't have gone to the intention and meaning of my own work. I also think about all those times where I see critiques for time of day photographs, particularly around the landscape photography. And the general rule is you need to shoot early in the morning or late in the afternoon. But I also instruct and teach. And so I have a number of different landscape photographs that we're actually taking during the middle of the day. They're set up for compositional instruction. They show rule of thirds, maybe leading lines, but they're also intended to show just how flat the light is during the middle of the day and how you have to take that into account as a part of the story you're attempting to convey in your photographs. Maybe the light is compelling during the middle of the day and you wanted to take a photograph of that time because you were inspired by the light. But more oftentimes than not, landscape photographers prefer those golden hours towards the beginning and end of the day. However, if I'm showing you a photograph and I tell you that the purpose of this photograph is to teach my students how to not photograph during the middle of the day if they do not want the look of that flat light, if they actually want a different appearance and a different story and a different essence in the photograph, and this is what happens when you don't do that, that photograph actually is a very good photograph for that purpose. So its intention and its rational for being shown is not, "Oh, this is a beautiful sunset. Everybody look at how awesome my sunset is." It really is a teaching tool. So in that regard, I think the photograph stands up. So that all of these things got me really thinking about, if we're going to really look at photographs and analyze them for what they're worth, we probably need to do different styles of photographs differently. So if you're a commercial photographer, fine art photographer, more documentary style, maybe you're a photojournalist, fashion, all these different wedding, all these different subsections of photography, we probably do need to critique those differently. We need to analyze those differently. And we'll do some of those in detail in future episodes. But in general, it got me thinking about, is there a high-level process that we could, without knowing all these different nuances of the different genres and subclasses of photography, kind of get into and really think about our work so that it would actually be meaningful, even if we're not specialized in one of those given fields. And as I got to thinking about this, I was reminded of an article written by Minor White and Walter Chappell in 1957 for Aperture magazine, titled "Some Methods for Experiencing Photographs." And in that article, Minor and Walter kind of broke down photographs into four buckets: documentary, pictorial, informational, or equivalent. And in there, they really talked about how you could put all the photographs into one of those buckets and then do your analysis or reading of the photographs within those. And they kind of came up with a kind of a high-level piece about postponing judgment, figuring out what the photograph type is and all of that. So what I've done is kind of taken some of that and some of my own experience in the classroom and then kind of come up with like a three-step process for analyzing images, even if you're not from the particular genre or subclass of photography, that will hopefully make it easier for us to move forward in evaluating the work. So one of the things I think happens when we look at photographs is we create that first impression, and we usually pass a value judgment as a like or don't like. If we set that aside and we think about the first impression more as a set of words, a key phrase that we get when we look at the photograph, that's not the judgment aspect. It's a, when I looked at this photograph, I saw this. So if we take a famous photography like Ansel Adams' Moonrise over Hernandez, when I look at that photograph, there's the light hitting the cross, there's the moon there. So if I pick some key words around that versus, oh, I like that photograph. If I talk about the romanticized West, or I talk about vast landscape or something like that, it becomes, I think, words that I can then use later after I understand the photograph better. If I choose, say, something from Diane Arbus in the work she did, I might have the phrases around, you know, an uncomfortableness, or I might have the word uneasy. So something like that might be really helpful. If I look at Dorothea Lange's Migrant Mother in that photograph, do I see despair? Do I see mother supporting children? Do I see desperate times? What is the initial impression I have there? And I think that's really important. And I think one of the most important things there too is to actually write that down. Because one of the things that happens to us as we look at images and we start to learn more and more about them, the number of vocabulary words we have to describe the photograph grows, and we lose the words of that initial impression. After you have the words of the initial impression written down, I think it's really important then to observe the entire image. And I mean every square millimeter of that photograph. We want to look at the relationships of the objects, the relationship of the light and the shadow, the use of space, the use of both positive and negative space. How do those inform the photograph? I think that's really important, particularly if you're looking at something like a fine art photograph where it really is about those potential relationships. I think if there's people involved in the photograph, I think we need to look at who those people are. If it's just one person, two people, a group of people, what is the relationship that's built between those people within the photograph? Because their position, how they relate to one another, the gestures between them, all become really important in our understanding of who those people are in the photograph. I think we also need to look at what's going on in the photograph in terms of the foreground, the midground, and the background, and how do all of those things relate to one another? Do they help build the three-dimensionality within the photograph? Do they compress the photograph? How do all of those things work? I also think we need to look at the why of the photograph. Not just the why of the photographer taking the photograph, but the why of what is unfolding in the scene in front of us within the photograph. So I think those components are really, you know, important for us to think about. I also think about, what else does this photograph associate with? Does it associate with other paintings, other sculptors? Does it remind me of an impressionistic painting? Does it remind me of another photographer potentially? Does it remind me of work I've seen earlier? Does it remind me of something cinematic? There's all these different influences that have created things within my own mind, and if I can start to get a handle on what those are. I think then once all that's done, what's really important is to go back then and now ascribe some vocabulary to that photograph and compare that to the first impression. Because the first impression is that knee-jerk gut reaction. And while informative, once we've looked at the entire composition, the entire photograph, I think it becomes a lot more compelling. And from that, we're then able to start to see in the first impression much more into a photograph before we make a knee-jerk reaction. And we can experience photographs in a much more meaningful way. Also, if we then think about how to communicate that back to somebody, we're now communicating back the, this is what I first saw. These are all the things I saw during the photograph in my analysis of what's happening in the photograph. And then finally, this is the impression I'm left with. And so that really creates, I think, a much more strong connection to the work and a much more strong relationship between the person doing the analysis and the person who actually took the photograph. Like I said earlier, I think there's different types and different genres of photography where the analysis can go much deeper in support of the actual genre. And we'll talk about those potentially in future episodes of the podcast. But for now, I think this concept of the first impression, observe the entire image and write those impressions down and then reassess and share that, I think would be a great starting point for anybody who really wants to find more meaningful aspects in their work. So I would encourage you to head up to the AFI website, check out the top 100 movies. I've included a link in the show notes. And also, don't ever worry about watching maybe, you know, that Weekend at Bernie's movie that you secretly don't want to tell anybody you watch, and it's okay if it's on your top 10 list. Thanks again for tuning in to The Perceptive Photographer. You can find us on iTunes and subscribe there. You can also find us at www.theperceptivephotographer.com. And I hope you have a great week behind the camera, and I'll see you next time.